Welcome to the Pesky Report, episode 337. We're brought to you by Beyond the Monster. My name is Jake T. O'Donnell. I am joined by Hunter, and it's the Miners Talk. It's the Miners Crew. So far today, it's just me and Hunter. We'll see how the rest of the show goes. But this week is a big week. Obviously, Red Sox opening day in Seattle is on Thursday, but the following day, the Red Sox minor league season will officially kick off with the Woo Sox season starting. They will be playing the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs to start out their season with a three-game series. On next week's show, we'll get a chance to talk a little bit about what happened in those three games. And so we're going to spend the first part of today's show previewing the Woo Sox season. We have a decent idea of what their roster is going to be. They have not officially announced it yet. But we're gonna go through what we expect the roster to be and see what we got. But anyway, that's a little bit of an intro. But Hunter, how are you doing? How are things in your neck of the woods?
I'm doing great. As you know, I just found out a couple minutes ago that the Woo Sox were playing in Lehigh Valley. So I'm gonna definitely make an effort to get to those games next weekend. This weekend, I guess that'll be a lot of fun if I can get there. Hopefully the weather is not too cold for me, but right now we're looking good.
Yeah, it's always so touch and go this time of year, no matter if it's in Boston or any place that there's no dome or retractable roof. Like, you know, the Red Sox don't have to worry in Seattle. Like they have the roof there. They're going to be fine. But, you know, there's no roof at Polar Park. I don't know that there are really any minor league stadiums that have a roof. That's not really how the minor leagues roll. That's how they can. You know, that's how people can afford to go to games because the stadiums are, you know, not to take anything away from especially the Red Sox affiliate stadiums, which are all pretty nice. They range from like extremely nice to the Woo Sox one to pretty nice, which is what I would say the Salem one is. But we're going to start with talking about the Woo Sox. And again, like I said, we don't necessarily have the official roster yet. As always, we rely on Sox prospects. They are the gospel. The guys from Sox prospects were down in Fort Myers. The editor of the site, Chris Hatfield, was taking some questions on Twitter on Sunday night. We're recording this Monday, and one thing that he did mention was that the Woo Sox guys have left the camp. They have left Fort Myers, and so I'm not sure if they've gone back to Worcester or if they're going to Pennsylvania. Not really sure. Most likely they've gone back to Worcester for a few days, getting settled there, and then they're going to head out to Pennsylvania. I don't know that for certain. That would kind of make sense to me. And that was in response to a question about Anthony, Meyer, and Teal, the big three. Presumably they will all be starting in Portland. They're not starting in Worcester because according to Chris Hatfield, they were all still in Fort Myers when the Worcester guys left. So we know that. And we also do know that Richard Fitz, a.k.a. Dick Fitz, who will be pitching Tuesday, the day that you listen to this on the Pesky Report feed. He will be pitching in the final Red Sox exhibition game in Texas. And that it has been confirmed that he will be in the Woo Sox rotation. We also know based off of, some guys who have been optioned and who have accepted minor league assignments. Cooper Criswell was optioned to Worcester. Lucas Lutke, who has a ton of big league experience, has accepted an assignment to Worcester. I believe it's been confirmed that Roberto Perez, also a longtime veteran MLB catcher, has accepted an assignment to Worcester as well. He was obviously injured for a good chunk of last season, so not a huge surprise. He probably doesn't have a lot of other major league opportunities. So let's start, Hunter, by talking about the pitching staff, and let's start by talking about the rotation. The projected rotation for the Woo Sox to start the year is Cooper Criswell, Brandon Walter, Richard Fitz, Grant Gambrell, and Brian Van Bell. So the last couple of guys we mentioned there are guys who were sort of staples in the Sea Dogs rotation for a good chunk of last year. And Cooper Criswell has been stretched out to be a starter. We obviously know a lot about Brandon Walter, got pitched quite a bit in the big leagues last year. And then Richard Fitz is new to the organization. We talked about him quite a bit last week because he pitched in breakout game.
Yep.
But when you look at that rotation, Hunter, who stands out to you in terms of somebody you're interested in seeing, or what stands out to you about the repertoires of those guys?
I think the person I'm most excited for is Grant Graham-Brell, because he started last year. We've talked about this before. He started last year in high A. He was kind of like the older guy at the level, and it was a bad first few starts for him. And he had two really solid starts near the end of April. And then they promoted him to double A, and it kind of felt like it was a sink or swim moment. Like, hey, we got you. He was part of a trade, and injuries and everything kind of kept holding him back. And suddenly he was this 25, 26 year old in high A. And it felt like the Red Sox were like, all right, well, you're not performing super well at this level, but we need to see if there's anything with you, because they more than likely weren't going to be too excited about having a guy that's, you know, going to be 27 sitting in high A. Like if he would finish the year in high A last year, or even finished maybe with a cup of coffee in double A, they might've felt like, all right, well, at this point it's time to cut ties. So they put him into double A, and he responded phenomenally. He kept the streak going of those two really strong starts in high A, and kind of flew through double A. I think he finished with like a 3.42 ERA there. Continuously was going six plus innings. He had one game where he went eight innings and threw like 110 pitches, which just not something you see often from prospects. So it was nice to see that the Sea Dogs trusted him to go out there for eight innings, and that they were fine with him throwing 100 plus pitches. And then he finished the year getting two starts in AAA. And one of the big talking points in AAA last year was how bad the pitching was. It was a weird combination of like the catchers were not exactly pitcher friendly catchers, which is one of the reasons I think Roberto Perez accepting an option is such a massive thing. You have this guy who now has World Series experience, who's won Gold Gloves. Mm-hmm. The fact that they have him there to help train catchers and to help the young pitchers get into a groove is great. But it was a mix of that, maybe a mix of some bad luck, maybe a mix of working on a certain pitch, and then just Polar Park's not the most pitcher friendly park either. But Grant Graham-Brell went up there, and it was only two games. It was like 10 and two thirds innings, I think, but he had a 10 and two thirds innings, 1.69 ERA, 1.12 whip, 1.89 batting average against, 14 strikeouts. So he didn't let that affect him. He went up there. He saw everyone else getting promoted struggle. You know, we saw what happened with Shane Drohan. Brian Van Vell went up, and he kind of struggled a little bit. We saw Brandon Walter and Chris Murphy perform well in the majors, but struggle in AAA. And Gambrell kind of like took all that noise away, went out there, and continued to just be this dominant pitcher that we had seen for almost the entire year at that point. And to me, it's funny because one of the big talking points with the Red Sox all last year was they don't have any upper level pitching prospects. Like, oh, all their good pitching prospects are in low A and single A. Like, who cares? They're not going to be in the majors for a while. And Gambrell kind of just kept climbing the ladder and made his way to AAA. And now he's there, and he's someone that I feel like should be getting a little bit more buzz. But now suddenly you've got Wickelman Gonzalez knocking on AAA's door. You know, Dick Fitz came in. Brandon Walter's back there, and with the way he finished last year, looking decent in the majors, like there's a little bit more buzz around him. You know, Luis Perales is knocking on AA's door. Zach Penrod came out of nowhere. Like there's all that, Hunter Dobbins, there's all these guys, and it's like all of a sudden Grant Graham-Brell is a step away from the majors, and he's still not getting talked about. And I just feel like he's really getting buried and could be the guy that ends up continuing that success from last year and making a name for himself and earning a spot in the majors at some point.
Yeah. Gambrell is, you know, now, you know, Josh Winkowski is obviously in the big leagues. Gambrell is the other sort of last person that's left in the organization from that trade, the Andrew Benintendi trade. The other three pieces from that trade, Franchi Cordero, Freddy Valdez, and Luis De La Rosa are all no longer in the organization. And Gambrell is a fascinating story, had quite a bit of injury issues. They didn't know what was wrong with him. And then they finally figured out that he had all these, it was like tumors in his foot, right? In his ankle. Yeah. And he had multiple surgeries. He missed so much time and missed a lot of development. So, definitely as he gets closer to the big leagues, and hopefully he, you know, can make his big league debut at some point, and hopefully it's with the Red Sox. It's a story that will get more attention, and hopefully, you know, he's the type of guy that you feel good about rooting for him. It's a really interesting story. It's a good story, and it'll be great to see him get to the big leagues after all that he's had to overcome. So yeah, you talked about Gambrell. I'll just mention, you know, the other guys. You know, Cooper Criswell is a fascinating story. He pitched very well in spring training for the Red Sox. Alex Cora was very impressed with him. It seems like, you know, if there was another injury or something else that opened up, he probably would have made the team in the starting rotation. As it stands, I think that the reason why he's in AAA is because he still has minor league options. And he's not as sort of established in the big leagues as, you know, Tanner Houck, Garrett Whitlock are. And so those guys are going to get the nod for the big leagues over Criswell. I would be very surprised if we don't see Criswell in the big leagues sooner rather than later, because my guess is that he's the first guy up from Worcester, especially if it's an injury in the starting rotation. You know, they may look to Chase Anderson, recently signed, to be somebody that would maybe move into the rotation, and maybe Criswell comes up and is kind of more of the long guy in the bullpen. Hard to say exactly. But Criswell was somebody that the Red Sox front office identified in the offseason that they wanted. And they gave him a major league deal. You know, and as we know, the Red Sox didn't really sign a lot of free agents this past offseason. And Criswell was for a time, was the only one that they really had signed. And he comes from Tampa. There is would be kind of a funny irony if the Red Sox grab somebody who was only a reliever in Tampa and they turn him into sort of a competent MLB starter. It would be just turnabout as fair play, because the Rays have done that to the Red Sox and a lot of other teams in the past. So Criswell definitely is somebody to keep an eye on. I'll mention also Brandon Walter, who came up to the big leagues last year, like you said, Hunter, and pitched, acquitted himself pretty well. I think he had a couple of outings where he got lit up a little bit. That probably hurt his numbers overall. But Walter had this like very strange season last year where he really, really struggled for most of the year in Worcester, had a hard time finding it. I think that he tried to kind of adjust his pitch mix a little bit. They did try him out of the bullpen at one point in Worcester too. It didn't really work. And then I think when he went back later in the year, he was kind of exclusively starting. They have stretched him out as a starter. I, you know, watching him pitch on TV in spring training, thought he looked pretty good. I thought his command was good. He's a guy that is never necessarily going to throw hard. I hadn't really seen much or heard much about radar gun readings for him, so I don't know if he was throwing harder or not throwing as hard this year as previous years. His command is the most critical thing. He's going to have to live on the edges of the plate. And similarly to Criswell, if there are injuries in the starting rotation, I think that I think you will see Walter one way or another, either as a starter, and he has the versatility to be able to pitch in the bullpen too. And then I guess, you know, we could talk a little bit about Fitz. I think that we talked about him a lot last week, so yeah. I don't know how much we need to really get into it, but I think that Fitz obviously earned the right to be in the rotation in Worcester because of the fact that he didn't really have I don't think he had much to prove in Double A, because he was like the Eastern League Pitcher of the Year last year, right? So hard to make that guy go back to Double A after that. And he looked really good. He threw very hard. He was throwing 97, 98 miles an hour in the spring breakout game. I wanted to ask you, Hunter, about Brian Van Bell, who they have projected to be in that last spot in the rotation in Worcester. That's a guy who was an undrafted free agent from the COVID year, drafted out of college, and comes and has worked his way up through the Red Sox system. What were your, and he was somebody that there were different times last year, especially in Portland, where he looked really outstanding.
Yeah.
What was your impression last year of Brian Van Bell, and what do you kind of expect from him this year?
I'm not too worried about his, he finished with a 6.41 ERA in 13 starts, 60 innings in AAA. And I'm not really worried about that, because to me, that was something that he kind of, always had, like his first year, he had a 4+ ERA. His second year, he had a 6 ERA in high A, and then he moved up to double A and had like a 4.5 or something like that. And then last year in double A, he was phenomenal for the first half of the season before going over to triple A and struggling a little bit. But the numbers were never anything great for Brian Van Bell outside of like that first half of last season. But he always just kind of had a solid starter vibe about him. I know that sounds weird, but he was someone that you trusted to get you 5+ innings. Sometimes they weren't the best 5 innings. It would, 5 innings, 3 earned, or 5 innings, 4 earned, or 6 innings, 4 earned. But he was going to eat innings for you. He would do it efficiently. Like, he wouldn't walk a ton of people. Usually it would just be like he'd have an inning where he gives up 2 hits and then a homer or something. But I'm not shocked that he struggled going up to AAA. It's obviously a step up from AA. And as we've talked about, everyone struggled in AAA last year. So to me, the bigger thing is looking at that first half. I know you shouldn't just like ignore a half of a season, but looking at that first half, that was the first time we ever saw a dominant version of Brian Van Bell. We saw him barely walking anyone. The strikeouts were still not phenomenal. He's never been a big strikeout guy, but they were up. It was a little bit over 9 an inning, which is more than serviceable. I'm sorry, 9 per 9 innings. Obviously, he's not striking out 9 batters an inning. That would be
that would be really good. You have to look closer.
But he was the most consistent pitcher for double A for those first half of the season. And then even when he went up to triple A, he had a couple blow up outings, but a lot of the time he was still getting them, 5-ish innings, which, as I just mentioned, everyone was struggling there. It's not as big of an issue as the stats might make it look. I'm very intrigued to see how he handles the first part of this year, now that he's had a little bit of time to acclimate, now that he has a better catchers behind him. And I want to see if he can just kind of get that back down to like a mid-4s ERA. I don't expect him to ever be a prospect that dominates, but I think he can be someone that gets you consistent innings and earns a spot in the majors at some point as someone who's like a back-end rotation guy. Like, you need those guys in a starting rotation that they're not an ace or anything, but they'll be your fifth starter and they're going to get you 5+ innings. He doesn't have any dominant stuff. Like, his fastball barely hits 90. He's got a decent curveball, but nothing's going to blow you away. So he's really there to just not walk guys. And if he can limit the home runs, I think he could be a very good piece for Worcester. And I think the fact that he's their fifth starter speaks to how good that starting rotation is.
Yeah. And one other thing I really like about Brian Van Bell was that last year he did pitch, like roughly right around 140 innings last year, which is a good number, a good solid number for a minor league starter. That's kind of what you want to see. Maybe this year he gets up to 150, 160 between, maybe gets to the big leagues possibly. Again, he's not on the 40 man. So we'll see. Let's talk about the bullpen a little bit. And I think this is an area where the bullpen has really, and we'll just give us 1 second here. Hey, Derek has joined us.
He's always been here. I don't know what you're talking
about. He's always been here. What's up?
No, honestly, the power's here been shoddy. Last night, my roommate's side of the room had no power.
Well, Derek has joined us.
My laptop was dead, and I was like, I'm sitting here like, oh crap. I'm like, I can't charge my laptop. I'm like, what the hell do I do? And I'm like,
well, we are knee deep in talking about the Woo Sox if people don't know this, there's been very weird weather in the Northeast over the last couple of days. And I know that my internet at my house was a little bit spotty today too. So no blame there. But so we've just finished talking about the Worcester rotation, and we were about to go into the bullpen. So maybe this year. So last year we talked about the Sea Dogs Super Bullpen, and this year I think there's a very possibility that we're going to be talking about the Worcester Super Bullpen, because I look at what's on the Sox prospects site, and I see a really interesting, varied group of guys with who have had success at the big league level. Obviously, like Lucas Lutke has years of being a starter or being a reliever in the big leagues. Greg Weissert absolutely pitched well enough to be in the major league bullpen in spring training, but the Red Sox opted to go for Chase Anderson, somebody with more experience as a somebody that is would it fits more as a long man, which is what I think what they felt like they needed out there. You know, Joe Jakes was on the 40 man, who was great last year. One of the very few guys in the Worcester bullpen last year who actually pitched really well for the Woo Sox. You know, Justin Hageman was amazing in spring training too. He came over in the trade for Kike Hernandez. Cam Boozer looked good in spring training. Chase Hugart throws really hard. We know Luis Guerrero throws really hard. And you know, AJ Politi being one of the last guys on the list there. Jason Alexander is a possibility that we'll see him a bit this year too. And then some of those other guys that we'll talk about when we talk about the Sea Dogs, I think are going to be great too. So I will hand it over to Hunter. We'll just give Derek a few minutes to get caught up here. But as far as the Woo Sox bullpen goes, who is standing out to you as the season gets going?
I'm really interested to see what Zach Kelly does this year, because if he didn't suffer an injury last year, I think it wouldn't even have been a question of him being on the major league roster at this point this year. I mean, he went into last year as a piece in that bullpen, and it was one of those things where he started the year and it seemed like the expectation was he would just kind of get some cleanup innings, a lot of low leverage situations. And the plan or the hope was that he would build up into these high leverage situations. And obviously the injury derailed everything. But I'm really interested to see how he responds to this, because again, I think it wouldn't even have been a question that he would be on the major league roster. And now he sees himself in AAA with a lot of people, a lot of good talent on the major league roster in front of him, and a lot of good people around him on the AAA roster, where it's like, it's not even close to a guarantee that you were the first guy called up for a bullpen spot. So it's probably a much different situation for him, because obviously he fought and clawed his way to get to the majors, but it's a different situation than he probably envisioned for himself going into last year. So I'm interested to see how he responds, if he can prove himself again in AAA. It kind of sucks that he has to prove himself again, but if he can figure all that out. And then I'm interested to see what Joe Jakes can do, because I think it was old friend of the show, Ed Hand, that mentioned on Twitter the one day, if they didn't have the three hitter rule, if you could still bring in like a lefty specialist for one guy, Joe Jakes would have like a 15-year career, and he would be a big name of a dominant lefty pitcher that comes in and gets his guy out and he comes out then. But
he'd be like Mike Myers, Jesse Orozco or somebody like that. Like,
yeah, and he would always have a job in the majors, and he'd have a long career. So I'm interested to see. Now, obviously, as you mentioned, he pitched very well in AAA last year. He's one of the few guys that looked good. But I'm interested to see how he fares against right-handed hitting, to see if that's something he's working on. I don't know how you work on that. Maybe it's like, hey, this specific pitch is working, I got to work on a location, you know, up and in or down and away, whatever it is. But maybe he has something that he's trying to figure out that will work more against right-handed hitting. So I'm interested to see if that's a noticeable thing. Like if we start noticing like, hey, he's throwing a lot more inside pitches against right-handed hitting or something. So I think those are two guys that are going to be interesting to see, because they're both very close to the major. Like they've both been in the majors. They're both obvious options. Like obviously it'll be fun to watch Luis Guerrero, but I think that there's a lot of pieces ahead of him. If there's an emergency, it's not going to be, hey, let's call on Luis Guerrero for 3 days.
Yeah. Definitely think that Luis Guerrero, who did not get off to like sort of the best start necessarily in Worcester last year, is going to be somebody that is going to get a lot of attention, you know, pitching in the Futures game last year, throwing, as Lou Maloney said, a hundy in the spring breakout game. Somebody, and again, Boston guy, it seems destined that he will pitch in the big leagues this year. And then I think it's a deep, interesting bullpen. It is so night and day from last year, when it really felt like the Red Sox could not rely on guys to come up from Worcester and contribute. And you'd have guys that would come from Portland up to Worcester and really struggle. So Derek, as far as the bullpen goes, who stands out to you as somebody that you're going to be kind of trying to keep an eye on as the season gets going here?
I mean, the obvious one's Luis Guerrero. I mean, it's like, duh, right? But I think the guy I'm really intrigued in is Zach Kelly, because of the coming back from, like, I know we technically want to talk about prospects, but we are a minor league show and we talk about minor leagues, and I think Zach Kelly
still counts as a prospect.
I don't know if he does.
I think he still has prospect status.
He might, but he's had the time in terms of, like, he's played in the big leagues before. He's not like a, you know, he's not like Luis Guerrero, for example, right? Where Guerrero hasn't played in the big leagues. I think for Kelly, it's going to be interesting because he is coming off the injury and what was it?
Yeah, he had the elbow injury last year. He had the brace surgery, and
that's what I thought.
You know, he did come back. So he technically graduated in May of last year. From the, because he only has 23 big league innings, but Sox prospects, the way that they do it is, because technically rookie eligibility is can be both at bats or innings, but it's also days of big league service. Yep. So he would have exceeded the days of big league service, but yes, we are a prospect. We're a minor league show. Like, we talk about plenty of guys that don't have
yeah, we brought up Bobby Dalbec a couple times last year.
We certainly did.
More than a couple times.
Yeah.
But I think he's important because he's like, he is the MLB depth piece. And I don't know if I've said this on the Pesky Report before, but like, when I look at organizations, I kind of look at them as like having four pillars. And it's like, you have your MLB talent, you have your MLB depth, your top end prospects, and then your farm system depth. And Zach Kelly falls into that second pillar of, you know, MLB depth right now, because he is starting the year in AAA. And the Red Sox have a lot of good relievers in AAA, as you guys have already kind of stated, because you have guys like Weissert, Kelly himself, Jakes, Lukey, who all very well can pitch in the big leagues if needed. And then you have guys like Hagemann and you have Guerrero and et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to go down the whole entire list, but they have guys that are very much going to be exciting in this AAA bullpen. Now, is the bullpen maybe look a little bit good for AAA? Yeah, you know, it does. And I wonder how that all works out with, in terms of giving guys opportunities, especially when, you know, a guy like Luis Guerrero, maybe they want him closing, or maybe someone gets moved up to from AA. Obviously, guys are going to get injured in the big leagues too, which is why I think Zach Kelly's super important. And also, too, it's important, too, because you never know how someone's going to come back from an injury, especially an elbow injury. And I think when you look at the, you know, grand scheme of things, you know, Zach Kelly coming into 2023 seemed like he kind of had a bullpen place kind of locked in, and then, you know, gets hurt, and now we're into 2024, and it's like, where does he fit in the MLB puzzle? It's just like, there's just not enough spots. So I think he's going to be important in that sense, because if you can get the Zach Kelly of, you know, the 2022, when he, you know, was really good in AAA.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
And then he gets called up to the big leagues and was solid in the big leagues as well. If you can get that version of Zach Kelly, I think that's a very important piece to your organization. It gives you more organizational freedom, especially if people want to say, oh, the Red Sox are going to finish in last place, they should sell at the deadline. Well, if you're confident in Zach Kelly's abilities, you know, and he's still hanging around in AAA, it gives you more than enough freedom to go, oh yeah, we can trade one of our relievers and just bring up Zach Kelly.
Well, and I think that had to be part of the motivation for trading away John Schreiber, right? Was just the fact that they could, you know, move him and bring in friend of the Pesky Report, David Sandlin, like for, you know, just because they had so much other depth. And then, yeah, you're probably going to see that again. I think that it's a good opportunity to segue into the position players. And I think we to go hand in hand with the pitchers, I think we do need to start with the catchers, because the Red Sox, it cannot be overstated the sort of real problems that the Red Sox had with catching depth at the top of the organization last year, and the fact that this year it's a completely different group of catchers. It's guys with big league experience in certainly Roberto Perez has a ton of big league experience. Hunter mentioned this earlier that he's, you know, been the starting catcher of a team that was in the World Series. You have Tyler Heineman, who has big league experience, is on the 40-man roster. Mark Colasvary, who was sort of renowned for his ability. One thing that we're a little bit unclear about, and this is Hunter and I were talking about this before we started recording, is the status of Steven Scott as a catcher going forward. The fact that he is listed on the Sox prospects projected roster at first base. It's unclear how much catching he's actually done this spring. Is that a full-time move to first base for him? How much does his bat is, we can talk about that when we maybe talk about more of the position players, but it seems like between those three guys, Perez, Heineman, and Colasvary, that's going to be the bulk of the catching. And that's a huge deal for the pitchers. Those guys are, you know, have good defensive ability. They're going to help bring those catchers along. And again, it's a far cry from Jorge Alfaro and, you know, Ronaldo Hernandez, and, you know, Caleb Hamilton was probably the best, you know, he's probably on par with some of the guys that they have this year. Although, again, as we saw in the big leagues, Caleb Hamilton just like can't hit at all. So huge change, the catching situation. I don't know if Hunter, if you have any additional thoughts on that.
Yeah. To me, it was it's one of those things where none of them were like, none of those were sexy moves to bring in. Oh, the Red Sox are bringing in Roberto Perez. Like, no one was excited about these moves. It was, in fact, you saw a lot of the more negative fans crapping on the moves. Like, oh, I thought Craig Breslow was going to come in and actually sign real people. And it's like, you have to sign these depth players too. You can't not have minor league rosters. And to me, these were such important moves that people aren't going to realize. If you're not paying attention to the minors, you're not going to realize how important they were. But to get three guys that are very much renowned for their, like, all three of them are defense first catchers. And as you mentioned, a far cry from having Jorge Alfaro back there. I mean, Ronaldo Hernandez was just listed as a DH all last year. Like, they one of their main catchers, and minor league baseball's website didn't even want to list him as a catcher. So to have three guys that are going to make life so much easier on all of these pitchers. And as you mentioned, we don't know what's going on with Steven Scott, but he now has three people that can help mold him into a better catcher. When Kyle Teal gets there, when Nathan Hickey gets there, they all have these great mentors now to help them figure things out. So again, none of them are moves that anyone really would talk about after they happened outside of like the first hour. But I think they're all going to end up being very important moves. And I think we're going to see that with how a lot of these guys pitch. As we mentioned when we were talking about the starting rotation with Brandon Walter and Brian Van Bell struggling in AAA, and with the bullpen, most of the bullpen struggling in AAA. I think we're going to see a lot of those guys improve this year. I think a lot of them aren't going to have those miserable numbers so consistently. And I think a massive part of that will be having competent catchers, because it's not just framing, it's game calling, it's throwing people out. I mean, watching one game of Jorge Alfaro trying to throw someone out at third base, I never need to watch that again. I never need to watch him try to throw a ball over the mountains like Uncle Rico. I'm good.
There's a reference. I don't know if Derek was alive when that movie came out.
But yeah, so I'm thrilled at the catching position in AAA this year.
Yeah. Derek, what are your thoughts about that? And like, how do you think that Steven Scott is going to fit into that mix? Like, is he, and then, you know, is his bat really going to be able to carry him at first base? I don't know. I'm really fascinated by this. I would love to have some more intel on how much catching he's actually done in spring training.
Well, I think the most interesting thing is none of the catchers in AAA are 6 foot tall. I found that funny. It's rare to see catchers who aren't 6 foot tall. And Heineman, Perez, and stupid last name that I can't say.
Colasvary.
Colasvary. Yeah.
Kolzvari. I'm totally going to forget it
there
in like 5 minutes.
Got it.
But none of them are. I think Kolzvari is what, 5'7", I think he's listed at.
Yeah.
According to Sox Prospects.
Short for catcher. Yeah.
That's, you know, I thought that was funny. I was looking at it. I'm like, hold on. I'm like, this. I'm like, what? 5'7", that's short for a catcher. But I do think I really like what they're doing. It's clear there is an emphasis on pitching and pitching development, especially in AAA, in terms of bringing in these catchers, big league experience, especially Roberto Perez. I was actually a little shocked. I was looking at it and, you know, maybe it's because I don't love Reese McGuire. Maybe the, you know, parking lot incident doesn't make me look favorably towards him. But I was looking at it, I'm like, why not Roberto Perez on the big league roster? I was starting to look at it like, I mean, like, who cares if he hits? He's going to play great defense and help the pitching staff. But that's also why they want him in AAA too, because he's going to be able to help the younger guys coming through AAA in the rotation and the bullpen and whatnot, almost as a secondary pitching coach too in some senses. So I think overall, I think, you know, I'm okay with it, although I kind of don't like Reese McGuire. So, like, I kind of wish Roberto Perez made the
team. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. Like, I think, you know, if we get to a point, you know, in a month or two, I don't know about how Perez's contract works if he has opt-outs during the season. I would have to go back and look and see at the contract details when he originally signed. But, you know, it could be a situation where, yeah, if McGuire is struggling, you know, defensively, or he's just like absolutely not hitting at all. I'm less concerned on the hitting front with McGuire. Like, he can make decent contact. He's never going to be like, you know, it was like stunning the other night when he hit that grand slam. Like, also social media was like, what is this? Like, whatever. You know, he's not like a big power hitter, but he can at least make contact. So if he's struggling there, and maybe even defensively, he's not really holding his own, I think it's really interesting. It feels like Connor Wong has been catching Brian Baio a lot more. I noticed that like the other day, like, and you know, McGuire had been kind of Baio's personal catcher. Like, I think I could definitely see a scenario where Perez is elevated to the big league roster in place of McGuire at some point, like, just, if, you know, based on how things go. But so let's,
I do want to add real quickly on Steven Scott too.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to try and put him into kind of a utility, more of a utility type role, like he kind of had been before he started getting more run at catcher, because he had been playing, you know, kind of all over. There was at one point where he was catching, but he was also playing some first base, some left field, some right field. Now, I'm not saying they're going to put him in left field or right field, but you never know. I mean, can't hurt versatility wise. If he can play out there, if he could play like a left field every now and again, like, can't hurt, right? You know, I think that's kind of, I think they could be looking at it in that sense too. It's like, well, it can't hurt if they think his bat can play, like, get him on the field. Maybe it's a little bit similar to Dahlbeck, because Dahlbeck, it was like, oh, Dahlbeck, you know, first base, third base. It's like, that's kind of it. And then last year, it's like, ah, now we're going to chuck him in right field. And it's like, he did well in right field, and now he's on the big league roster. And it's like, well, if we need an outfielder, I mean, you could do a heck of a lot worse. So it's like, I think it could very well be a versatility thing with him too. It's like, hey, let's get some of the versatility back, because behind the plate, like, maybe they're like, behind the plate, it's not going to be like a defensive stalwart or anything. So let's build versatility. And, you know, I know teams don't like carrying three catchers in the big leagues, but if you have a guy who can play, you know, first base and corner outfield as well as catch, maybe it, you know, brings, it's like, hey, maybe we do carry this guy because he can play other positions.
It's like Steven Vogt kind of when he was a player. You know, he was that type of guy, even, you know, until this past year, Dalton Varshow, kind of that type of guy too. So looking at kind of the rest of the projected lineup for the Woo Sox, I think that Nick York at second base, and it's sounding like maybe more time in the outfield too. He's the biggest prospect who has made it now to Triple A. We had some conversation about him last week. Also, guys that have played in the big leagues for the Red Sox. Well, really, kind of just one I'm seeing here, and that's David Hamilton, who I think is probably going to get the bulk of the time at shortstop. I expect that we're going to see quite a bit of Vaughn Grissom here in short order. And then there's some interesting guys that have been that have come into the organization as sort of minor league free agents from other spots, like Mark Contreras and Eddie Alvarez, Jamie Westbrook, Mr. Barrel, who had some big hits in the preseason. So I'm going to throw it right back over to Derek. What stands out to you about this position player lineup group?
I think when I look at the position player group, I think it's a little bit of like a lack of like outfielders in terms of like prospects and like big names, I guess, in terms of some in that sense. And when you start looking through the system and you start kind of peeking down towards Double A, you know, yeah, you have Roman Anthony there, but like you're mostly looking at like the infield group of like Blaze Jordan, Meyer, you know, Mydrop, Paulino, et cetera, right? And then even like Teal and Hickey as catchers, right? Like you're not really looking towards, you know, you're looking at, okay, we're looking at this outfield, you know, the Red Sox have a ton of infielders, you know, and then you start seeing like, oh, Nick York's going to maybe play some outfield. What about David Hamilton? He played a little bit of center field before. Like maybe David Hamilton gets some run in the outfield this year. I think that's going to be the interesting thing with this Worcester team, especially as guys like Meyer, for example, get called up. When Meyer gets called up to AAA, you know, hopefully, you know, barring, you know, hope he stays healthy, plays all whatnot. But Meyer gets called up to AAA, let's say midseason. David Hamilton's not playing shortstop anymore. He's not, right? So it's like, okay, now where is he going to play? Well, he can play the outfield, maybe, you know. Brings versatility, right? Nick York, then maybe, you know, moving him to play some outfield a little bit. All right, build some versatility, you know, because I'm not saying that, like, he's going to get moved off of second base in AAA, but it doesn't hurt to have versatility, especially, too, like I said, if David Hamilton can't play shortstop all the time, maybe they do want to play him out of second base a little bit, right? So stuff like that, I think that's kind of the interesting thing for me on this team. As we talk about a guy like a Blaze Jordan, who's going to probably start the year in Double A, it's like, all right, if he plays first base, Stephen Scott, maybe you can't play first base anymore. So I think that's what really caught my eye with this team. It's like, okay, it's like, these guys start getting moved up to AAA, you know, now we don't know what the organization is going to look like in a few months, you know, you never know. But I that was the first thing that I looked at. And I was like, it's like, okay, that's interesting. Because like I said, like if Meyer gets called up, you know, let's say in June, right, hypothetically gets called up in June to AAA. Now David Hamilton has what, 3 months of the season left that he's not probably playing shortstop much. Like, he's got to find a different position. So I think that that was the thing that really kind of caught my eye. In terms of individuals, I'm interested in what, like, Nico Cavadas is doing. Because, like, that's a guy who's, like, can only play first base. Kind of supposed to be a power bat, but, like, he's got to make contact with the ball. There's also that thing going on there. If he's kind of your kind of, I guess you could say, 3-2 outcome guy in some senses. Because I remember, what was it, 21 when he had, like, the big run in the, I think it was 21, and everyone was, like, losing their mind. Like, oh, here's our next DH. And it's like, chill the brakes a little bit. And the thing I'm interested with him is, you know, how is he going to continue to fare against AAA pitching? Can he have success against AAA pitching as well? You know, he very well could play a little bit of first base, probably a DH, a decent chunk, I would assume. So I think that's going to be interesting with him in terms of, like, how he looks against AAA pitching over the course of a full season.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about Cavadas, too, because he struggled basically all of last year, sub-200 batting average for a long time. But something we've always known about Nico Cavadas is he's very streaky. He strikes out a lot, but he walks a lot, but he hits a ton of homers. And he had a really strong last month of the season in Worcester. He finished the year hitting 209 there. But in September, he slashed 246, 338, 596 with six homers. Still struck out a ton, but the on-base percentage was semi-encouraging. And technically, it was down from what he had been doing. So what I should say is the on-base percentage, he finished the year with a 364 on-base percentage. That's still encouraging. The fact that he hit 246 in the last month is encouraging. The fact that he had a damn near 600 OPS is slugging percentage, there we go, is encouraging. So he's in a weird spot now where I like if Steven Scott's playing first, that's taking a lot more time away from Nico Gavadis. He could DH a lot, but I'm wondering if they're going to try to start just playing matchups with him and keeping him away from left-handed pitching. And I think if that's the case, we could see a really nice boost in his numbers. Obviously, the RBIs and the home runs might go down a bit because he's not playing as much. But I think we could see an increase in average. We could see an increase in walks because pitchers are going to be more scared of him again. We'll see an increase in home runs per at-bats. And I think we could see a nice little decrease in the strikeouts. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that doesn't strike out a lot. But if he's getting favorable matchups, I think that will be really big for him. And then outside of that, they do have Christian Koss listed as in AAA. And I'm still really intrigued to see what he can do because he's shown a little bit of some decent field versatility. I think he's a really solid defensive shortstop. And 2 years ago, he was a really phenomenal player in AA, where I remember this time last year, we were talking about him shocked that he wasn't starting the year on the AAA team. And we were like, he'll be up in a week. And then he actually kind of struggled in AA for a little bit. He ended up getting called up anyway. But it was that's how good he was, that we were shocked that he wasn't starting the year in AAA. And now Worcester has Nick Sogard, Nick York, David Hamilton as their three starters. And I don't really see that changing much. I think Koss will obviously spell any and all of them. But he's in a much different spot to me than he was last year, because last year it was like shocking that he wasn't on the AAA roster. And now this year it was like, oh yeah, and they have Christian Koss. So I'm interested to see how he handles that. If he can bounce back last year from a rough season last year, because he had a couple really good pockets where it was like, oh, Christian Koss has come out of it. Christian Koss is back. It's going to be interesting because he's not going to have consistent playing time. So if he does struggle, he might not be able to just like, oh, well, I'll be back out there next day. If he goes 0-for-4 in a game, he might not play again for 3 days. So it'll be interesting to see if he can get hot and stay hot and how he works out of those cold spells that he's going to hit.
Yeah, I think that we are definitely reaching this point now where we're really getting towards this critical mass of position players and having too many guys for not enough spots. And we're going to start to see, especially as the really solid prospects start to move their way up. A lot of those guys are in Portland. We're going to talk about them. And then a lot of those guys are going to start to move up to Worcester by the end of this coming season. And the Red Sox are going to have some hard decisions to make developmentally for some of these guys, especially guys that we know for different reasons they like, that there's going to have to be some hard choices. And whether it's trades or development list or whatever it is, I don't envy the sort of Brian Abrahams of the world who have to try to figure this out in terms of who's supposed to play where, when. We don't necessarily like it when guys get traded, but for some of these guys, it might be the best thing for them in terms of their development and the way that things are going to go for them going forward. So I just wanted to mention, it is very strange to look at the Worcester roster and not see Ryan Fitzgerald on it. Just as the sort of staple in the Red Sox system, a staple in the Worcester community, they had a very nice event for him, after he, went to the Royals and is in their system. And we certainly wish Ryan Fitzgerald, who's like an A+ guy, the best of luck, but it is weird to see a Worcester projected roster without him. I think a guy like, we're going to see who fits into some of those areas now. I think Jamie Westbrook can really mash. We saw it in spring training a bit. And I think he's going to hit some of those train track shots, possibly in Worcester. Mark Contreras has like a cool mustache. There's going to be other guys that step up into some of these areas. So I will go around and ask each of you guys just like quickly, just give me, let's do it like this. Give me your sort of team best position player. And I don't know what's going on with this like thumbs up bubble.
Is it still popping up for you?
Yeah, it just came up. I don't know what that is. StreamYard is doing a good job with the bubble. I'm doing a good job, and it's telling me I'm doing a good job. There's like this bubble that pops up with a thumbs up. Give me your sort of best hitter on the Woo Sox this year, your best pitcher, and then let's just say like one breakout that could be like that's maybe not a super heralded guy. And like let's do it. Let's try to do it quick. Because we just still do want to get to Portland. So Derek, so best hitter, best pitcher, and sort of breakout.
Well, I'll start with best pitcher. I'm gonna go with Dick Fitz. I think that it's, you know, definitely needed to say his name, but no, in all honestly though, I do think he's I do think he's set to have a very good year. I think just in general the pitchers are going to have a nice year with the catching situation there. Mm-hmm. And with the total kind of change in organization, I guess, kind of view on pitching with the bringing in Breslow, Willard, Bodie, and then even Andrew Bailey. I know he's not going to be with the AAA guys, but they were with him in spring training and whatnot. So I still think that'll, like, Bailey still has an effect on these guys. And if they get called up to the big leagues, he's going to be affecting them. So I think overall, I like what they're doing there on the pitching side of things. And I think Fitz is really going to do well from that. And I don't know what the Yankees looks like in terms of their pitching development in the minor leagues. But I feel confident right now in saying that I feel like the Red Sox probably are better off in that area right now, with the guys that they have and they've brought in this offseason in terms of addressing pitching. So I'm going with Richard Fitz. For best hitter, I've kind of been, where do I go on this one? But you know what? I'm just going to go with Nick York. I have faith in him. And, you know, I don't want to just pick the top prospect, but I just have faith in Nick York to have another solid year. I don't know if he's going to tear the world on fire, but I feel like, you know, Worcester, hitter's ballpark, like, I feel like it's just kind of, it just feels like it's going to be a good year for him, in my opinion, with that. And the fact that he gets to play in Worcester, too. I think we saw what Rafael's numbers did when he went to Worcester. Obviously, you know, it's like he hit better in AAA than he did in AA. I'm not saying New York's necessarily going to do that, but can't hurt to be in a hitter-friendly ballpark. And then for kind of your, I guess you want to call it breakout player or just like whatnot, it's kind of hard because there are a lot of veterans on this team. So I guess I'll go with like Cam Boozer because he was solid in spring training, although he's kind of your older veteran kind of guy too. Okay. But like, I like what I saw from him for spring training and, you know, lefty doesn't hurt at all, depending on, you know, what injuries may potentially happen on the big league roster and the bullpen. It's, yeah, Lukey and Jakes are on the 40-man, and then the next guy is, what, Boozer? You know, unless they decide to go with, like, a Walter and Chris Murphy's injury isn't, like, too bad, but that's still an unknown. So I'm going to go with Boozer.
Okay. So I'm gonna go next. So for hitter of the year, I am actually going to go with David Hamilton. I just think, like, I think that he is just going to lean into what he does best because that's how he's going to make his path to the big leagues, like in one way or another. So my prediction is that I'm going to pick him as hitter of the year, but this also is kind of doubles as the sort of speedster of the year that we've talked about, where I think he's going to break his own Red Sox franchise stolen base record. Like, I think he's going to get like 80 stolen bases this year. He's just going to, every time he gets on base, just green light. He's just going to go. He's going to steal second. He's going to try to steal third. He's just going to try to be that guy. And so that's my prediction, is that I think he's going to, he set the record 2 years ago. I think he's going to break it again. Pitcher of the year. I pretty much agree in terms of Fitz. I just think like he's going to be he's going to show the best stuff. I think he's going to get to the big leagues at some point this year and is going to contribute. And he's probably going to be in the rotation for the Red Sox in 2025. And then for breakout, I'm going to stick in the bullpen too. And I'm going to go with Justin Hagenman, who I think like is a little bit unheralded. He again pitched great in the preseason this year, and he, you know, it was sort of the lesser of the two pitching prospects that came over in the Kike Hernandez trade last year. Obviously, now he's the only one left because Nick Robertson was traded for Tyler O'Neill. So I think Hagenman is a fascinating pitcher. He, you know, his velo is ticking up and has an interesting mix, good secondary stuff. So I'm interested in it to see what he can do. So Hunter, what do you got for those three?
Everyone so far has talked about something that is making this really easy for me. Grant Gambrill, I'm going for pitcher. I really like the short sample size that he gave us last year in AAA. I loved how quickly he turned into this really consistently good pitcher. I like the fact that he can go deep into games, and I think that he's going to just continue to be a very solid option. I don't think he's going to be as dominant as we saw in those two AAA starts. That would be ridiculous, but I could see him putting up similar to his AA numbers where he had a mid threes ERA, pitches deep into games, gets strikeouts. So I think he's going to continue that. And I think that he's in a position where there are probably a couple people ahead of him, like Brandon Walter will get called up before him. Cooper Criswell will get called up before him. Depending on how he does, maybe Dick Fitz surpasses him when it comes to that. So I think he has a chance to also pitch a heavy majority of the season there. Hitter, I completely agree with everything you said, Jake. I'm kind of mashing in all the aspects of the offensive game for David Hamilton, and I think he's going to, like you said, he's going to do everything he can to get to the majors, and I think that's going to consist of him trying to just get on base a ton, steal a lot of bases. I think we'll still see some home run power. He seemed to really love hitting at Polar Park last year. And then for breakout player, I'm going to actually stick with Nico Cavadas because I do think that despite the more than likely less playing time, I think it's going to lead into more favorable playing time for him. And I think that we're going to see a nice boost in his numbers.
All right. So let's get into Portland. It's maybe a little bit abbreviated because we're already at about an hour or so. We'll do the same thing. We'll start with the pitchers. We'll talk about the hitters. Again, we have a little bit less of an idea about the Portland roster. Again, we're going based off of Sox prospects because they're the best. And those guys have been down in Florida, so they know. From what we understand, the guys that are going to be on the Sea Dogs are still in Florida. Their season doesn't start until the end of next week, I think. Because they actually open in Portland this year. I know that Matt, who was on the interview with David Sandlin, said he's going to be at opening day. So yeah, they open against the Hartford Yard Goats on April 5th at Hadlock Field. And I want to start this out by just saying that I think that there is a possibility, and part of me doesn't like to say this, and it's part of me that like thinks that getting too high to yourself. I feel like there's a high probability, a definite possibility, that the 2024 Portland Sea Dogs are the type of minor league team that we will be talking about in 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
Like look at the talent that was on that
the team. Talent, yeah. that this is. And we've seen that if you've been a long time Red Sox fan, you've seen this in the past. We've seen teams that had Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and Andrew Benintendi and a bunch of those types of guys on. If you go even back further, there were teams that had Dustin Pedroia and John Lester and Jonathan Papelbon and those guys on it. We're looking at, hopefully, fingers crossed, something very similar with this Portland team, where this team is going to start this year with the top three prospects in the system, all on this one team. And it's three prospects that the Red Sox have told you they're building towards. They're building around. They're waiting to really build up the big league team until these guys, Kyle Teal, Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, come up and contribute at the big league level. They are three up the middle talents. Fully expect that Roman Anthony is going to be the center fielder. Marcelo Meyer, of course, will be the shortstop. We saw over the weekend him making an amazing play in a spring training game. Let me get to this in a second, because it was a question that I had received about Marcelo Meyer's defense at shortstop. And then Kyle Teal, of course, behind the plate at catcher. We talked about all these guys quite a bit last week on the spring breakout game, so I don't know how much we have to really talk about them. There was a question that one of our listeners, Gavin, had asked me about, do I sort of view Marcelo Meyer as, like, you know, a long-term shortstop? And I think that you kind of saw the answer to that, you know, in the game. You know, is Marcelo Meyer a big league shortstop? I think that we've seen this every time I've seen him, either in person or in games. I've seen Marcelo Meyer as somebody that can stick as a big league shortstop. He certainly, with a healthy shoulder, has the arm for it. He has the range. He has the sort of smoothness of the ability to sort of gets rid of the ball quickly. Now, as he gets older and he fills out a little bit, it's going to be interesting. Like, is it going to be a Xander Bogaerts? I could see it being like a Xander Bogaerts situation where, like, he's definitely a shortstop until he's like 30. And then he gets a little bit too big and he has to switch positions. He could also just stick at shortstop. He could be a Cal Ripken Jr. type who does it for I'm not saying Marcelo Meyer is going to be Cal Ripken Jr. I'm just saying, like, he could be like a 15-year big league shortstop. And then maybe the last like 5 years he has to move back to third base. Cal Ripken actually came up as a third baseman and then he moved to shortstop early in his career. But I think you saw that throw that he made the other day. Like, that was incredible. That was an amazing play. The spin around, make the accurate throw. I think for the Red Sox, we might have a situation where, because of Trevor Story, you know, being under contract, maybe when Marcelo Meyer comes up to the big leagues, he's going to play second base. Maybe he's going to play third base and Rafael Devers will move to a full-time DH role. But for now, there's no reason to move him off of shortstop. I think he is a big league shortstop. And I think that we're looking at a guy in Meyer who has been a lot of doubters that have come out of the woodwork. A lot of people that are in sports media in Boston who they believe it's their job to just break people down and denigrate them and kick them when they're down. And people that really hated the previous front office regime, that, you know, Marcelo Meyer was the sort of crown jewel draft pick of Heim Bloom's time in Boston. And there's a real desire, as there always is in Boston, to tear people down. I think that Marcelo Meyer strikes me as being a very competitive guy. And I'm sure that he's taken that in. And I think he's going to take it out on Eastern League pitching this year. And I expect a huge year from Marcelo Meyer. So I guess that I actually started with the hitter. So, like, maybe we should start there. So I don't know, Hunter, if you have any thoughts about Meyer, maybe we just start talking about Meyer, Teal, Anthony, like the top three guys.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know how it is for other teams, other media outlets, other fan bases, but I can't remember the last time I've seen, and it's not everyone. It's definitely not everyone, but can't remember the last time I've seen, you know, media and a fan base want to tear down their top prospect more than Marcelo Meyer. He'll make a bad play in the field and you'll see 500 people being like, he can't play the field. He's not a shortstop. And it's like, you're ignoring all the other highlights that he's made. So to me, it just blows my mind seeing people. It almost feels like they want the team's top prospect to fail. And I don't understand that. Especially considering he's shown you nothing but positives for 99% of his career. Yes, he struggled last year when he moved up to Double A. It is very well known at this point that he was playing through an injury, and that altered his stats tremendously. But I think he's going to, like you said, I think he's going to take it all out on Eastern League pitching this year. I think there will be a lot of people silenced, and I think he's going to establish himself as one of the top prospects in baseball again. And when it comes to Roman Anthony, I think it's crazy that Marcelo Meyer was such a clear-cut number one prospect on the team, and Roman Anthony was just kind of like top 15 range, and the ascent that he had is still something that, no matter how much we talk about, I don't think I'm going to get over it. Like, the fact that he started last year in Single A as an interesting prospect, and now he's starting the next year as someone already with Double A experience, who, as you mentioned, is part of a big three that we could be talking about for years of, like, holy hell, Portland had this roster. Like, how did they ever lose a game? And then we saw a couple weeks of Kyle Teal in Double A last year too. And it's the fact that he went up there and just didn't stop hitting, and then we see him in the spring breakout game and he goes 2 for 2, and it's like, this is a guy that when he was drafted, it was like, hey, this is a really good defensive catcher and everything. And since he's gotten into the Red Sox organization, he's definitely kept up that defensive side of the bargain, but he's also mashed. He's hitting. He had a majestic homer the other day on a backfield. It was against a major league pitcher. I don't remember who it was. But Kyle Teal's done more than anyone could have expected in such a short amount of time. And the fact that Portland has those three guys surrounded by so much other talent, like even if you took all three of those guys out, this wouldn't be a bad roster. Like, you'd still have Blaze Jordan, who mashes. You still have Chase Mydroth, who gets on base and plays phenomenal defense. Edinson Paulino is a firecracker, like, exciting, makes plays, gets on base, can steal bases, can hit homers. Corey Rozier is going to hit for a decent average and steal 50 bases. Phillip Sykes is going to steal bases. Nathan Hickey is going to hit homers. Like, this is such a good roster, even if you take those three guys out. So the fact that they're all in there, it's just, this is going to be must-watch TV.
I agree fully. Derek, like, what stands out to you about specifically those big three guys, and then, you know, anybody else that is, like, really going to, you know, stand out to you on this Seahawks roster?
Well, I'll answer the defense question on Marcelo Meyer, and it's going to sound like I'm taking a shot, because I kind of am. If Xander Bogaerts can play shortstop for 10 years, Marcelo Meyer can. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's fair.
I said it. Too bad.
I think that's totally fair. I don't think that's a shot at all. I mean, you know, yeah.
Well, that's going to sound like a shot. Is it a little bit? But
at the end of the day, if you can hit, that's the most important thing. Like, especially at shortstop, you know, it's like, yeah, because if you hit at a certain level, and certainly Bogaerts did for a long time, you know, it takes care of things in terms of the defense. But anyway,
yeah, and like, it's, if you can make the simple plays, and which Bogaerts did, and you can hit, you'll be fine. And Marcelo Meyer can make the simple plays and more. He'll be fine at shortstop. And this, I honestly, I have him kind of set to be like the, I mean, I guess I'll give it away now. I kind of have him being like the guy, having a massive, massive year in the minor leagues this year. I mean, I still have Meyer as my number one prospect in the system. I know Sox Prospects doesn't. I know some places don't. For me, I don't look down as much on the, you know, shoulder injury or whatnot. I'm kind of the, you know, injuries happen, you know, as long as you come back and play well from them. And obviously we haven't seen that yet, but I'm still like, Meyer is the guy they have the big three now, but like, you go back to when they drafted him, it was almost like, hey, this is the guy we're building around. And as much as Red Sox fans didn't want to hear it, and as much as they were trying to not say it, that's kind of been the case. It's like, oh, no, we're going to build around this guy. This guy's our franchise. And it sucks to put that much pressure on a guy. And I guess it kind of helps now that you have two other guys, Roman Anthony and Kyle Teal, where it's like, okay, not all the pressure's on Meyer now. But like, with the three of them together, and I just want to kind of speak on the three of them as a group, it feels like, and I've said this time and time again, I'll say it again one more time, having guys come up through the minor leagues together is best for success. It is. They come up together. They establish a winning culture together, as we saw in High A last year. You establish a winning culture together. You grow together. You get better together. And it makes everyone better. We want to talk about, you know, some of the World Series teams for the Red Sox. And you look at back at like 07, you had like the Pedroia, Ellsbury, Lester, Buchholz kind of group all kind of coming up. You know, Papelbon, all those guys coming up. And there are more guys who Jeff Lowry, Brandon Moss, et cetera, right? You can go down the list. Like, a lot of guys who were getting into the big leagues around that time who came up together in the minor leagues. So you look at the 2018 team and it's, you know, your Mookies, Benintendi, you know, et cetera, grow with that one. Jackie Bradley Jr. a little bit, Bogaerts, you know, although those two are maybe a tad bit earlier than like Benintendi, the Devers, you know, kind of group. But like, these groups that come together through the minor leagues as a group, they come together as a group. I feel like it only helps everyone get better together because they're all there. They're all pushing each other to get better, especially too, when it seems like all three of those guys have a really good head on their shoulders. They're not competing against each other. They're trying to all get better. They're trying to make each other better. And in the long run, that's great for the organization. And if those guys are setting that precedent of, hey, like, you know, we're doing this together. And those three guys are kind of your, you know, in terms of when the media looks at the organization, those are the guys they're going to look at. You know, we've seen stuff written about, oh, these three guys, they're best friends. And, you know, they do this, they do this, they do that. And they're created, and they're, it's a great environment and blah, blah, blah. And all this stuff coming out about the organization because of these three guys. And I think overall, the situation that they're all in, I just think it's good for the organization as a whole. And honestly, I don't know if I'd pick anyone else, maybe outside of Alan Castro, that I'd want to kind of be the face of the minor league system outside of these three guys.
You get plenty of time next week to talk about Alan Castro, Derek. Trust me. Yeah, I completely agree with that, that winning matters, building the culture matters. You know, I think that was just last week or a couple weeks ago, Greenville got their rings for winning the championship, and that was like a big thing. And we heard Brian Abraham, I think others, talking about like how much they value winning and how that's important to development. So it completely agree with that. Looking at the group of position players again, it's one really excellent prospect after another beyond those top three of Blaze Jordan, his improvements as a first baseman, the fact that he looks like he's in great shape, and we know what he can do from a power standpoint. Edinson Paulino is like a great prospect. There's a lot of teams that would have Edinson Paulino as like their top minor league, you know, middle infield prospect. And this guy gets overshadowed by a lot of other prospects. And it's too bad, because Edinson Paulino can do a lot of things really well. And I think at worst could be a big league utility guy. Chase Mydroth is my guy. I talked about him last week. He just, the guy's a fucking ball player. I've said that over and over again. He puts the bat on the ball. He can make all the plays in the field. He could play second. He could play short. He could play third base. He might be a little challenged at first base because he's like 5'6". So I don't think that's going to happen. But the guy is fun to watch, and I'm pumped to see him. He's going to be such a fun part of the team this year. Corey Rozier is really fast. He can steal bases too. He gets on base. Philip Sykes was on our show in December, friend of our show. He has power, and he can play good outfield as well. Nathan Hickey, we haven't even talked about him. The guy is an outstanding left-handed hitter, and yeah, he is probably, you know, we'll see what his catching situation is going to be. I'm sure he will still catch a bit this year. But, you know, I think the Red Sox are really focused on his bat and getting his bat in the lineup wherever he is. And then I think that what we're seeing, and you look at the Sox prospects list, like, it's tough sledding for guys like Matthew Lugo and Alex Benelis, and even a Tyler McDonough, who I think Tyler McDonough is going to get a lot of playing time because he's very versatile. I think there's at least a chance Tyler McDonough could start the year in Worcester too. We'll find that out this weekend. But outside of that group, and I'll go back to Hunter, like outside of the top three guys, like who are you really looking forward to seeing?
If we're going off the Sox prospects list, I would love to see what Brian Gonzalez can do in Double-A, because he mashed the ball in High A last year, strikes out a ton. I don't remember what it was, but at one point he had a stretch of games with at least one strikeout that was like, it was kind of getting comical at that point. But he had a lot of really good stretches of baseball, had a couple really clutch hits, and I think he can, if he can kind of find his way into the lineup, and like you said, you know, maybe McDonough's in AAA. We've already seen Corey Rozier in AAA at one point, so maybe he's, you know, close to that. Philip Sykes spent all last year in AA, so maybe he's not too far off from AAA. I could see Brian Gonzalez getting a lot of playing time, especially if they're giving Kyle Teal a day off and Nathan Hickey goes to catcher. I don't know, maybe Nicky Gaspar's playing there, but let's just say Nathan Hickey is taking over at catcher for a day off for Kyle Teal. I can't imagine they're not getting every opportunity to get Brian Gonzalez's bat in the lineup. And this is a lineup that has a lot of power, but it also has a lot of guys that are going to get on base. Like, yeah, Blaze Jordan hits a lot of home runs, but he also gets on base. Edinson Paulino gets on base. All Chase Mydroth does is get on base. Marcelo Meyer gets on base. Corey Rozier, Roman Anthony. These are all guys that have really high on base percentages. Like, this is a lineup designed to have someone in the middle of it just bringing everyone home. And I could see Brian Gonzalez getting a ton of opportunities with runners in scoring position. And sure, he's going to strike out sometimes swinging for the fences, but he's also going to hit a lot of home runs and a lot of wall ball doubles swinging for those fences. So I think even if he doesn't get a ton of playing time, I think he's going to have a lot of big games, and it's going to be one of those things where I feel like once a week I'll be tweeting about Brian Gonzalez having two hits, a home run, and six RBIs in a game or something ridiculous. It's going to be a fight for playing time for a lot of people in Double A, but he's someone that I think will take advantage of even a small amount of playing time.
Yeah. And so, you know, let's talk about, it's an incredible group of position players, even a guy like, you know, Brian Gonzalez, who, yeah, I was fascinated to see his name on there. I mean, I don't know that he has a lot left to sort of prove at Double A at this point, or at Single A. So it would make sense to see him up there. But again, playing time is going to be really hard for a lot of these guys. Let's just kind of in the interest of time, let's move on to the pitchers a bit here. And not to be forgotten in all of this is that it is also a very strong looking Portland pitching staff, highlighted by Wickham and Gonzalez, who we spent quite a bit of time talking about last week after the spring breakout game. But also, you know, you've got projected to have Hunter Dobbins, friend of our show, who has a very interesting pitch mix, pitched well at times in Portland last year, could be a guy who is maybe a candidate to move up to AAA, maybe relatively quickly. And then Angel Bastardo, who was a favorite of ours last year in Greenville, again, great pitch mix, underrated in the system, I believe. Isaac Coffey, the Coffey Man, possibly the most consistently good pitcher, starting pitcher in the Red Sox system last year. Again, could see him moving up to AAA relatively quickly. They also have Zach Penrod, very fascinating name, guy that was a independent ball signing last year. Probably more realistically, he's a bullpen guy going forward. And they also have Helchrys Olivares, who was an offseason signing in the rotation for Portland. But Derek, what do you think about the sort of starting pitching staff? Like, who stands out to you in Portland?
I think, like, obviously, Wilker Gonzalez does. I think this rotation is going to be way too just fun. This is going to be a fun rotation. But I'm really excited to see what Angel Bastardo does, because he's a guy who we've talked about. We talked about at times last year. And when you look at the overall numbers, it doesn't look, like, great. It's like 21 starts in, you know, in high A, and it's like a 4.62 ERA. It doesn't look great. But he had some, like, moments during the year where he looked really, really good. And I think it's going to be interesting. Obviously, he did make his first three starts in Double A last year, so he has that. Also struck out 139 guys last year, which I think, you know, can be overlooked a little bit. Also only walked 46 guys, so I think that, you know, strikeout to walk rate, at least to me, that seems solid. Just trying to do math in my head, it seems solid. But so overall, I think overall though, like, it's just going to be a really fun rotation. You have Gonzalez, you have friend of the show, Hunter Dobbins. Then you have Bastardo, the Coffee Man, Isaac Coffey, and then Penrod looked really good in his time last year in the system. And then Olivera. So I think overall, I think it's going to be a really fun rotation. I'm starting to look, though, and be like, where do these guys, if guys from high A start getting called up, where do they start fitting in? We're almost running into the same problem they had last year, where it was like, too many guys for too few rotation spots, which is not a bad problem to have. It's just, you know, they're going to have to address that eventually, unless, you know, injuries start becoming a thing, which we never hope for injuries. So I, you know, the hope is they do have the problem of too many guys for too few rotation spots. But overall, I think it's going to be a really fun rotation. And I think it does speak to what the Red Sox are doing on the pitching side of things, because, you know, Gonzalez obviously is, you know, depending on who you ask, might be the top pitching prospect in the system, depending on who you ask. And then you have, but then it's like guys like Dobbins and Bastardo and Coffey, who aren't like these big name prospects, but like they're having success, right? I think what Dobbins and Bastardo are probably in like the 20s in the Sox prospect rankings, I think. And I'm not sure where Coffey is, but like they're not the big name prospects, but they're having success in the minor leagues, and they will do, and you know, they do look like guys where it's like you look at them, you can go, yeah, I could see the way that this guy becomes an MLB pitcher in the future, you know. And I think that's kind of the thing. I think the pitching development. I think it's only set to get a boost, with the people that they brought in this offseason. But, like, just in general, I feel like it's been somewhat underrated because it's mostly been in the low minors. Now these guys are hitting double A, and it's like, and they're starting the year in double A, and it's like, okay, it's like, now's your test, I guess, if you want to say, you know, is the jump in the minors really is from high A to double A. Once you prove you can succeed in double A, it's kind of, you kind of really start looking at the big leagues.
Right. Yeah. This is the proving ground. Double A is always the proving ground for prospects as they come up. And if they can do it at double A, you feel really good about them having the chance to do it in the majors. And it's a big test for these pitchers who are going to be starting the season. Because a lot of these guys started last year in Greenville. So, you know, they got the taste of it last year, and now they're moving up into the sort of the big time of the Eastern League in particular here. Hunter, what stands out to you amongst the starting pitchers and who, you know, besides like the Wickelman or some of the higher up guys than guys we've talked about a lot, are you looking forward to seeing in the rotation?
Yeah, just a quick note on Brian Gonzalez, because I went and looked it up. It was 33 straight games with a strikeout at one point during the season. To me, the big thing about the Portland rotation is, first of all, we talked about how the Red Sox top three prospects are in the system. Wilkerman Gonzalez is also their top pitching prospect, just to kind of give you a feel of how ridiculously stacked this team is. Like, according to MLB.com, he is their number 7 or 8 prospect, and the next closest is Luis Perales at 11. Some could argue he's better, but to me, that just shows how ridiculous this team is. They're not just stacked offensively. They have top-tier pitching prospects, too. But I really feel like we need to discuss Zach Penrod, and I'm really looking forward to getting a full year of Zach Penrod this year, because he came in last year and immediately started dominating. He was massive pitching performances in the high A playoffs, and is in such a weird spot. I think he's 27, so he's not ever really going to get the big recognition of a lot of these other guys. Like, Hunter Dobbins is younger and has a lot of starting experience and really proved himself last year. All those guys have done great things. And then there's Zach Penrod, who's got, you know, half of a season under his belt, but that half season was so great. And I'm intrigued to see, like, now, as you both mentioned, this is, you know, double A's the proving ground. And we saw how dominant he was in single A. And I'm really intrigued to see what carries over to double A, because if he continues to look good, he's someone that I think the Red Sox would try to get to the majors quickly because of his age. And I think he's someone that could quickly become a fun player to follow in the minors as he moves up and potentially becomes this left-handed piece for the Red Sox, however they decide to use him. But he's probably the least known name there, maybe, in that starting rotation, but someone that I think could hit the ground running the quickest. I could see him being the one that comes out of the gate and dominates. I also think it's worth noting that we've been talking about how congested the starting rotation is. CJ Liu is now expected to be a reliever, and he threw a no-hitter last year. Yeah. Like, that should tell you how much talent there is on this Portland pitching staff.
Yeah, they're stacked. And and that's, you know, good segue into talking about the bullpen, which I still think is possible that there's like a Portland Super Bullpen here. Even with some of those guys moving up to AAA, and, you know, Jorge Benitez had a great spring, I think was truly a candidate for one of the Red Sox lefty bullpen spots. Didn't end up getting it, of course. Ryan Zephyrjohn was throwing 100 in spring training. And he's somebody that, you know, I think was a possibility to get picked in the Rule 5. He didn't. Christopher Troy, of course, friend of our show, friend of a lot of shows.
He's better than Ronald Acuna.
Better. He got Ronald Acuna out in the last spring training game. Therefore, Christopher Troy better than Ronald Acuna, the 2023 National League MVP.
Yeah,
the first 47
undisputed fact.
Chris totally
Troy better than him. Fact.
Do we want to use that? Because then Pat Light's better than Mike Trout, and I don't know about that one.
Yeah. Who? Anyway. and then you know, CJ Liu was mentioned, Jacob Webb, Theo Denlinger. These guys all throw hard. And then there's a couple of guys that are listed as inactive on the Sox prospects roster. I'm not sure what to kind of make of that, but Noah Song, we didn't talk about him as far as the starters go. We'll be interested to see where he shakes out. Of course, he did pitch for the Red Sox in a couple spring training games. And then Alex Hoppe, who they have listed as on the IL on the Sox prospects list. I don't know if he's hurt or what's up with that, but Alex Hoppe might be the hardest thrower in the entire system. And, he, I think, could be on a fast track to the big leagues if he has his command because of how hard he throws. But I'm really intrigued by, I would say Hoppe is actually the guy that intrigues me the most because I just want to see where he's at velocity wise. You know, we've talked a lot about how these guys are adding velocity to these pitchers in the minors. Is it possible for Alex Hoppe to add velo? I don't know. you know, can he get to 101? Can he get to 102? If he can do that, then yeah, he's going to be in the big leagues quickly. And you know, we know that CT throws hard. We know that Zephyr John throws hard. So again, this is a really stacked bullpen. It's a stacked team. There's guys that are maybe good enough to be starters in other organizations that are going to be in the bullpen here. So, Derek, does the Portland Super Bullpen live on?
I think so. I will say with Hoppe, he's from Davenport, Iowa. So now I know Iowa exists as a real place, because there's someone in the Red Sox organization from there. That's about my extent of knowing people from Iowa. There's maybe like two other people that I know of that are from Iowa. I think the bullpen's going to be good. I think, I don't know if it's the same as like last year with like, you know, Guerrero and Ryan Fernandez and et cetera, and like those guys, both, you know, both of them aren't there. I thought it was interesting that it seems like they have Denlinger set to start the year in Double-A, which I found intriguing because he had time in Triple-A. I think he had like a 6.70 something ERA in Triple-A last year. So, you know, who knows what's going on there. I thought that was interesting though, to see him, you know, in Double-A on the Sox process page. I was looking at that and I'm like, that looks kind of weird, you know, and thinking about it, because like I said, he did have time in Triple A last year. But overall, like I think I'm most interested to see how CJ Liu turns out in the bullpen and see what that does for him, because like Hunter said, the guy threw a no hitter last year, and you know, he throws what he kind of sits normally 93-95, according to Sosa, he's topped out at 98. So if he comes into the bullpen and starts throwing, you know, 96, 97 consistently, maybe even a little bit harder, you know, what could that do for him? I think that's kind of the kind of question. It's like, what could it do for him? His stuff ticks up in the bullpen and, you know, he already has, what, four pitches. Now, doesn't mean he's going to use all four pitches in the bullpen. He probably doesn't. He probably uses just his fastball, changeup, and slider out of the pen.
Yeah.
And stays away from the curveball. But I think it very much gives him, gives Liu a chance to maybe take a little bit of a jump, considering the fact that if the stuff ticks up and whatnot, because he's someone that's intriguing. Like I said, threw a no-hitter last year. But you look at kind of the overall numbers, you know, 26 appearances last year, 24 starts, you know, a 5.35 ERA isn't something that's going to get you excited. So I think when you look at the thing, and also too, you gave up 19 home runs last year. That's not ideal at all, considering the fact that in 2022, he threw just over 100 innings between high A and then his one start in double A in 2022. And he only – actually, no, sorry. He gave up 28 home runs. I'm blind. I can't read. I thought it said 7, not 27. I'm blind. So don't disregard that fact because I am blind. But still, he still gave up a decent chunk of home runs last year. But he does strike out a lot of guys, 11.4 strikeouts per nine last year. So he's still striking out guys. I don't know what the strikeout rate is, which I'd rather have, but I don't have – Sox Prospects doesn't provide the strikeout rate. So that's kind of crappy. But that's, I guess, where is that? Actually, no, they're a strikeout rate. 28% was the strikeout rate last year. So that'll play in the bullpen. That'll play, especially if his stuff takes up it, and you would assume he's going to strike out more guys. So that'll play in the bullpen, I believe.
Yeah. So yeah, Hunter, what stands out to you in the bullpen?
First off, Derek, it's Alex freaking Hoppy. Because if you were aware, Davenport, Iowa is where Seth freaking Rollins is from.
Oh no, I'm aware of that. Okay. But like, that's my that's my only other reference that Iowa exists.
But to me, the big thing about this bullpen is Zephyrjohn, Troy, Hoppy can all hit over 100. Wyatt Olds, Theo Denlinger, Jacob Webb, CJ Liu can all hit almost 100. Brennan Salusi can hit like 96. Like, all of these guys are consistently high 90s. A lot of them have disgusting off-speed stuff, breaking stuff. To me, the big name is going to be Brennan Salusi, because he's one of two lefties in the bullpen with Jorge Benitez. And if you take one look at his numbers, he was not very good last year, but he was miserable the first 3 months of the season. He entered July with a 9 ERA, a 3.27 batting average against, and a 2.39 whip. Just the numbers were bad. He had a 1.42 ERA in 12 and two-thirds innings in July, a 4.15 in 8 and two-thirds in August, and a 1.35 in 6 and two-thirds in September. The strikeouts were up, the walks were down, the home runs were down. Everything was such a massive improvement. He finished the year with a 5.29 ERA, 2.91 batting average against, 1.82 whip. So again, if you look at those numbers in a vacuum, they don't look great. But if you look at them compared to where they were halfway through the season, he was phenomenal in the second half of the year. I think he's going to get a lot of chances as one of two lefties in the bullpen. I think there's going to be a lot of games for the Red Sox where the Sea Dogs are going to want to throw out a left-handed pitcher. And I think he made some very marked improvements last year. I'd love to see if he can continue that, especially considering I think he's going to get a semi-decent amount of high leverage type situations, because there's going to be a lot of innings where the Sea Dogs are like, oh, there's, you know, two lefties coming up this inning. We should play the matchups. And I think it will be, he's one of the few guys that doesn't throw 100, but he's got some very good stuff. I'm intrigued to see how he handles things. If he does get that uptick in average in velocity, maybe he goes from sitting around 95 to sitting around 96, 97. That'd be phenomenal. Maybe that makes some improvements. But there's a lot of big names in this bullpen, and I think Salusi being one of two lefties could make waves and kind of join that conversation of another really good bullpen piece for the Sea Dogs.
All right. So we'll do this quickly. Rapid fire. Your player of the year for Portland in terms of position players, your pitcher of the year pitcher of the year for the Sea Dogs, and your breakout like pitcher or hitter. So Hunter, go.
For hitter, we're gonna go Roman Anthony. I think he's gonna spend a decent amount of time there. I know people are gonna be upset to hear that they want him in AAA, but he's only had 2 weeks of AA hitting. I think he's gonna spend a solid chunk of the season in AA. Still not completely impossible that he makes it to the majors, but I think he's going to get more than half of the season in AA, and I think he's going to be phenomenal. Pitcher, this one was tough because I think Wickelman Gonzalez is the obvious answer, but I don't know how long he's going to be there. I think that's kind of the case for a lot of these people, but I think I'm going to stick with, you know what? I'm going to go with Brennan Salusi. I just talked about him. But I think he's someone that might actually stay there for a while, and I think that's going to make the big difference. I think he's going to put up really good numbers. And for breakout, ooh, this one's tough because I think there's a lot of people that are going to be fighting for playing time. But I'm going to be a little lazy in this, and I'm going to stick with the guy I talked about earlier. I'm going to go Brian Gonzalez because I think sooner rather than later, we're going to see Corey Rozier or Phillip Sykes get called up to AAA. And or Tyler McDonough, and Brian Gonzalez is going to slot into more playing time. And I think he's going to shine in a lineup that's going to consistently have people on base for him.
Okay. Derek, those three for you.
So for me, I'm trying to think about guys who I'm thinking will probably be in Double A most of the year, if not all of the year. And this is a guy for hitter, for my hitter of the year, I guess. This is a guy who many thought was going to kind of have a real breakout year last year. Although it didn't happen, although he still had stretches where he was good last year. I'm going to go with Edinson Paulino, kind of the forgotten man of this infield, I guess you could say, in some senses. Or not necessarily the team, because I don't know if he's as forgotten as maybe like a Corey Wosher or Phillip Sykes. But in terms of the infield, I think he's kind of the forgotten guy. So I think Paulino's set to have a good year. I think, the fact that he had the full year in high A last year, now he's going to jump up to double A. I think he ended the year well, I think, if I remember, if my memory serves me correctly, which a lot of the time it doesn't, so don't fact check me on that because my memory is horrific. And then for pitcher of the year, I'm going to go with Isaac Coffey. I just like what I see there. Got to go with the Coffey man. Last year he did make 11 starts and 12 appearances and in Double A last year. So he's already pitched in Double A, so he's going to be coming back to the level. And I think when you look at him, you're kind of looking at a guy who, last year the walks did jump up in Double A. I think he gets the walks back down. I think he's set to be very good in Double A. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if we see him in Triple A by the end of the year. That's my only concern with picking him, because he already does have some Double A experience, and it's like, okay, he could be maybe moving up to Triple A in the middle of the year at some point. But I'm going to go with Coffey. And then in terms of, I guess, breakout, does Paulino qualify as a breakout if I'm putting him as the best offensive player?
I don't know. I kind of think guys that are like probably below 25 on the prospects list or 30. You know what I mean?
Noah Song. There we go.
Okay, there we go.
Noah Song. Yes. What? I'm not saying I was necessarily going to think it, but I hope so, because he does seem like a good guy. I hope he has success in the minor leagues, because last year was a nightmare. It was a train wreck for him. What the Phillies did to him was, worthy of getting stripped of their first round draft pick. Or at least because it's Dave Dombrowski, that's very much deserved of that. So, I hope Noah Song comes back and has a really good year. I really hope so. Yeah.
All right. So for me, I'm going to say my, offense player of the year, offensive MVP. And if we're talking about guys who we think are going to spend most of the year there, I'm going to go with Chase Meidroth, because why not? Because he's my guy. And I think he's going to hit for a high average and make these plays on defense that you don't expect and that kind of thing. I'm going to pick him for that. I'm going to say for pitcher, I'm going to say Hunter Dobbins, even though I don't really know that he's going to spend a lot of time there. I just think he has just this nasty mix, and I think he's going to be, he's going to really stand out, I think, among some of the pitchers there. And then for breakout, I'm going to go back to Alex Hoppe, who I just think has this opportunity to be this a fast riser in the system if he's healthy and if he pitches effectively, because of the fact that he can hit triple digits on the radar gun. So that is my guy. All right, so that wraps up Portland, and also wraps up the WooSox, and that wraps up the episode. And so next week on the show, we will have probably a better idea of who is going to be in Greenville and then Salem, and we're going to talk about those two teams. And we'll also have three WooSox games that we can talk about. And that's it. Anything else from you guys, Hunter, Derek? Nope. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. Follow the Pesky Report on Twitter, on Instagram. Subscribe if you are not subscribed already. And if you are still listening to this, we really appreciate it. We will see you next time for Hunter and Derek. I'm Jake, and have a good one. Enjoy opening day for all of the teams. It's a great time of year. Baseball is back. And again, you're stuck with us every week, so get used to it. Thanks very much for listening, and we will see you next time.